is Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast. This is episode 54, and today we'll be talking about walking and talking in infant and toddler development. Before I get started, I wanted to mention that I have been working on setting up another interview, and it looks like that will be happening soon, but I will let you know more about that once everything is confirmed. Also, I wanted to remind everyone that my new book is out on Amazon now, and the price has been updated and corrected to the $6.50 in the United States dollars. So go ahead and get on there and buy it now. The title is Play With Your Food, How to Get Your Toddler to Eat. It's short, only around 50 pages, and I did this on purpose because I know not everyone has time to sit around and read 200-page books or more, especially parents of toddlers, which is who this book is geared towards. The basic topic of the book is, as the title says, getting your toddler to eat. And this is for all toddlers. And I'm hoping to be able to provide some suggestions to all parents who have little ones so they may be able to have happier mealtimes. If you or someone you know have an infant, or even if you don't have kids yet but are planning on it, this might also be a good book for you to have. There may be some tips in there to be aware of, so you will know what to look for and ideas to do with your kids to hopefully prevent difficult mealtimes from starting in the first place. If you have trouble ordering it because of where you live for some reason, send me an email and I will try and help you get a copy if I can. My email address is allison@mymidwesttherapy.com. I haven't discussed any research articles lately, so I'm going to do that today. The article that I found for today is called How Do You Learn to Walk? Thousands of Steps and Dozens of Falls Per Day. It was published in 2012 in the journal Psychological Science. The research was based in New York City, and the study included 151 infants, 72 were girls, and 79 boys. The infants were video recorded in a laboratory playroom anywhere from 15 to 60 minutes of time. The infants were in the playroom with their caregivers and were just playing freely. The main focus of the study were infants, or I would actually call them toddlers, ages 12 to 14 months, that were new walkers. There were specifically 20 infants that were crawlers, not walking yet, 11 and 12 months old, and 116 of the kids were new walkers from anywhere between 11 and 19 months of age. The study was looking at three different things. First, why crawlers are motivated to walk. Two, if the number of steps and falls per hour improve with their test and walking age in early walking skills. And number three, to find similarities and differences between standard and functional measures of walking skills. Standard measures are things like their step length and their step width. Functional measures are steps per hour, distance per hour, falls per hour, and proportion of time spent walking. One person analyzed the videos of each child. The lab playroom had floor mats that were able to detect the step lengths and step width while they were walking or crawling on it. The results indicated that walkers spent more time moving than the crawlers. Walkers had more steps per hour than the crawlers, and walkers moved farther distances per hour than the crawlers. The new walkers would take 69.2 steps before falling, and the expert crawlers would take 54.7 steps before crawling. Now, the crawlers weren't taking walking steps. Obviously, these steps are crawling steps. They were surprised to find that expert crawlers were still falling down while they were crawling. The walkers were noted to spend more time moving, took more steps per hour, and traveled farther distances per hour than the crawlers. What the study basically came down to was that expert crawlers were not more skilled than novice walkers, meaning they fell just as much, if not more, than the infants who were just learning to walk. The infants who were observed over 19 weeks showed a steady increase in step length and speed from their first week of crawling through their 19th week of walking. Basically, there was no backsliding in their skills by transitioning naturally from crawling to walking. It seems simple and obvious, but they did confirm that infants learn to walk through practice and repetition. The researchers suggested that infants may be motivated to learn to walk because they do get around faster and go farther than crawling without actually increasing their risk of falling. Where I would usually assume that when the infant goes from crawling well to learning to walk, they would actually fall more than they did when they were crawling well. But the researchers are saying that this is not the case. A final piece of information given in the study were estimates of how much walking a toddler does every day on average. 14,000 steps, the length of 46 American football fields, and 100 falls. In other words, 2,368 steps per hour, the length of 7.7 football fields per hour, and fall 17 times per hour. I thought this was a pretty basic but interesting study. I have attached the links to the whole article in the show notes in case you want to read the full thing on your own. There are more details to it that were also interesting, but I didn't necessarily need to mention here in the show. Going along with this topic of crawling and walking, which are some of the main gross motor skills we look at in the toddler years, I wanted to move on to talking about gross motor and language competing for brain power. I'm still looking for a research study that covers this specifically, so if you have one or know of one, please email it to me. It is fairly well understood that when a toddler is learning to do a new gross motor skill, their language skills tend to plateau or level off. They don't necessarily lose the language they have already gained, but they don't necessarily continue to make progress with it during this time either. This is a very interesting concept to me, and I know there has to be a neurological explanation for it, but I don't know exactly what it is. I can only explain it in a way that says that the gross motor and language pathways in the brain compete with each other. It is easy to describe it by saying that the child is so focused on the gross motor skill that they aren't able to focus on language until they have learned the skill that they are working so hard on. We usually see the language level off during the times when the child is learning to crawl and again when they are learning to walk. There may be some intermittent other times, but those are the two big times where it is the most obvious that they don't seem to be learning new sounds or words during those times, or at least usually not as many as before they started working on those skills. Of course, as with anything in child development, there are exceptions to this, and not every single child will go through this. The other interesting thing about this concept is when we relate it to vestibular sensory processing. Remember, this is a system where your inner ear, or the semicircular canals in your inner ear, help you detect which way your head is positioned in space, whether it's up, down, tilted, moving forward and back, or spinning, and so on. So when we are starting to crawl or walk and move in general, we are activating the vestibular sensory system mostly due to the movement of our body and specifically head in the world. The reason I find this so interesting is because as an occupational therapist, I tend to use vestibular movement activities as one strategy for getting kids to become more vocal and communicate verbally. This is a strategy we usually use with toddlers that are more like around the 18 to 30 month or 1.5 to 3-year-old range, something in that age range. And most of the time, those kiddos are already walking, so we're beyond the language plateau due to learning the new gross motor skill of walking. The reasons for the language concern at this age will vary, and that is not necessarily the point for this show. However, I have noticed that not all vestibular movements will encourage more vocalizations. Specifically, the activities where the child is not actively doing the moving are the ones where we tend to get the most vocalizations out of them. If you think about it in relation to this walking and talking stage, it makes sense. But as developmental therapists, we don't always explain it with this detail in mind. The most common activity where the child is not actively doing the movements is swinging. A toddler doesn't usually know how to swing themselves yet, so as the adults, we have to swing them. Swinging can be in a traditional swing, like a swing set, or in a bucket swing, or blanket swinging, or even on a sensory platform swing. Any of these types of swings where we are activating the swinging movement for them, and they just get to sit or lay there and hopefully enjoy it. If they don't like this movement, then you likely won't see an increase in vocalizations, other than maybe crying and screaming because they want to stop or get out of the swing. This is also not a guarantee that if you swing your toddler who isn't talking yet, that they will magically begin talking in the swing and continue on after they get out. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. But you can use movement, which activates the areas in your brain where language happens, and during the activity, you model the language for them. You also use this time to work on joint attention, which is part of communication and language, where they are socially focusing on you, and you are getting more eye contact or generally getting their attention towards you in some way. If you are working on signing, this is an excellent opportunity to practice having them use their signs to repeat the activity or to stop the activity if that's what they want. If the child likes the movement activity, let's just say it's swinging, after you swing them for a short period of time, and if they're liking it, when you stop the swinging, pause and wait for a few seconds to see if they will look at you at the bare minimum, which is joint attention, and socially appropriate to look at the other person to try and visually see what's going on and assess the situation of why the swing stopped and why you aren't swinging them anymore. Hopefully, depending on their skill level with socialization and nonverbal communication, you will be able to work on them signing something like more or swing to communicate that they want to start again. This might come after you model the sign and the word for them, where they imitate you in some way or attempt to at least, or you can help them make the sign. Then the key is to immediately restart the swinging, so they will more likely make the connection that if they do this one thing, then they get the swing. If they sign more, or make the sound M, or whatever the request is from you, even if you help them, that they get this reward type thing, which is something that they enjoy and want to keep doing. Even though signing is not verbal, you have a higher chance of getting some type of sounds along with the signs during this time because of the movement. And you're still working on activating their expressive language area through the signs. If you have a child who is not learning signs but is working on increasing the types of sounds that they are making, this is a good time to try it as well. Sometimes you will have a child who doesn't make specific sounds in imitation yet, but when you get them going on the swing, they will start to laugh and make some babbling sounds that you don't always get to hear from them. If this happens, you can take the opportunity to just repeat after them. Make those same sounds after they do to reinforce that you're listening to them and speaking their language back to them. Even if the sounds don't really mean anything yet, you will be reinforcing the idea of back and forth vocal play with you. The idea is to eventually get them to start repeating some of the sounds that you make. Now guys, I'm not a speech therapist by any means, but I collaborate with speech therapists all the time in working with kids in early intervention. So these are some strategies that we try based on our collective knowledge. I'm not trying to tell you how to do speech therapy at all. Please refer to your own therapist for specific recommendations with your child if that applies to you. In general, we think of swinging as being a fun activity that kids like to do. Most of the time, people don't think about the fact or even know that the swinging motion is not just fun for kids, but that it is making them feel good because of the sensation of flying through the air, which is related to sensory processing, whether you have sensory issues or not. It is a part of life for everyone in some way. Now, I've been talking about swinging, but passive movement activities can include other things, like spinning them or tipping them upside down and then bringing them back right side up again, riding in a wagon or a stroller or grocery cart, bouncing them on your knee, raising them up high in the air and bringing them back down towards your chest, and so many other ideas along these same lines. The passive movement activities just means that the child is not actively moving. They are not doing these movements or activities. You are moving them, and they are just letting you do it for them. This is an important distinction because I think it gives them the best opportunity to let the gross motor part of their brain take a bit of a break and allow the language centers to activate more freely. Remember, movement activities are vestibular sensory activities. This means their head is moving in different directions. Now, kids can do vestibular activities themselves, which means they are being more active in the movements. Things like running, jumping, riding a ride-on toy or a tricycle, climbing up on a slide and going down the slide, and so on. These active movements are ones where, even if they are good walkers by now and not necessarily learning a new gross motor skill at the time, those areas of the brain could still be competing for less obvious reasons. That's why I think we get better results with increasing their vocalizations when the movement activities are more like the passive ones. Although, as I said before, this is not a guarantee. It doesn't always work, especially not to the level that we probably want it to work. And this is definitely not the only strategy out there for increasing vocalizations in toddlers. But I did think it was worth mentioning because I don't think that this is something that only kids who have special needs or speech delays can benefit from. Even toddlers who have language and enjoy the swings or other movement activities can not only have fun doing them with you, but you'll be able to reinforce back and forth communication and social skills during those activities. These are positive skills for all toddlers to work on and make progress with, which will only help them in the long run. Don't forget to check out the link for the Autism Parenting Magazine in my show notes. Their latest issue just came out this week, and it has some great new articles about holidays and gifts for kids with sensory needs, and a lot of other very interesting articles for parents. You can sign up through the link I have provided, and it will help support me at the same time that you get access to a very cool magazine. They have a 50% discount going on right now on the subscriptions. Plus, there are a lot of additional bonuses that are being offered just for signing up. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.